Low-density residential development is a major factor in converting farmlands. The policy fragments farm landscapes and makes it harder for farmers to operate. The ongoing impacts from climate change, as well as the cost of food and production, battles over water, the aging farmer population, and competition for land that's driving up land values are all factors that contribute to the loss of farmland across the nation. Oregon in particular has some of the best soils and the most diverse array of agricultural products of any state in the nation, says the Oregon Agricultural Trust. To protect Oregon's working land and the rural businesses that depend upon it, the nonprofit Land Trust is helping farmers and ranchers keep their land. Joining the exchange are my two guests. Nellie McAdams is the founding executive director of the Oregon Agricultural Trust. Welcome to the exchange, Nellie.
Thank you for having us.
Also joining us is Steve Denny. He's worked for 37 years as a biologist for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and he owns 100 acres of land in Douglas County. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Charlie. It's good to be here.
So, Nellie, tell me about the problem that led you to lead the Oregon Agricultural Trust.
Well, I grew up as fifth-generation farmer in Yamhill County, and I just noticed the challenges that my family faced in passing land on to the next generation, and the fact that we needed to sell off and develop some land in order to pay estate taxes and to pay non-farming heirs. And I was wondering what other families were having to do if they were having to make similar decisions and losing farmland in the balance. And I wanted to provide an alternative solution so that they didn't have to lose the land that was supporting the business in order to pass it on to the next generation.
So how does your organization resolve the problem of lost farmlands?
Well, we primarily use a conservation tool called a working lands conservation easement, where landowners voluntarily sell the development rights that they don't need if they're going to keep the land in agriculture and protect the habitat. They get paid for protecting the land rather than developing the land, and they can use that cash from their real estate for paying attorney fees or estate taxes or even buying new land. And meanwhile, the land is protected forever and more affordable to future generations.
So aren't there other land trusts in Oregon? What makes yours different?
There are. There are about two dozen land trusts throughout the state, and each of them has a different focus. Many of them focus on protecting our essential habitats, and some of them focus on protecting agricultural lands as well. But there were large areas of the state that were not serviced by agricultural land trusts. So our organization started in order to fill those gaps and help farmers and ranchers have a solution for protecting their lands.
And you're paying the landowner, is that correct?
We do. So an easement is actually valued by the difference between two appraisals. We appraise the property right now with all the development rights, and that might be the right to build a house, a destination resort, a golf course, mining. So that's the first appraisal. Maybe that's $1,000, $1 million. And then the second appraisal would remove some of those development rights that are not needed. Maybe that appraisal comes in at $700,000. The easement value is the difference between those two appraisals. So in this case, $1 million minus $700,000 would be $300,000. So you get paid for the value of the development rights that you're giving up.
Gotcha. So, Steve, tell me about your land.
Well, we've owned the property for 36 years. We've had three generations of work on it. I've got the fourth generation is on the ground with my grandkids. And so we've had the property for quite a while and have worked all that time trying to improve it. Controlling invasive species. I've got a 39-acre project going on right now of doing some fire prevention and invasive species work and oak restoration on the property. So we've invested a lot of time and effort over those years trying to make the land better and work to pass it on to my sons and grandsons and granddaughters.
How much is it overall and where is it?
It's 100 acres, and it's located about 5 miles west of Roseburg in a community known as Looking Glass.
And how long has the land been in your family?
Like I say, 36 years we've owned it, going on 37.
So you grew up on the land?
Oh, no. No, I was raised in a small town in eastern Oregon called John Day. Worked on ranches most of the while I was growing up, and then working in the natural resource field. But we first bought this property in 1989.
Okay. And so tell me about your career and what led you to this point.
Well, I as you mentioned, I worked 37 years for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife as a wildlife biologist. I also spent 6 years working for the Nature Conservancy as their Southern South Coast Conservation Director, and then 5 years formulating an Umpqua Oak Partnership for the restoration and preservation of oak woodlands in Douglas County in the Umpqua Basin. And so, you know, and then I've also been on a number of boards. I'm currently on the board of the Bandon Dunes Charitable Foundation, and I was a member of the board for the Wild Rivers Coast or Wild Rivers Land Trust. Both of those have preservation of working landscapes as one of their primary directives. And so I've got this broad range, I guess, of different aspects. I was on the Predator Board of Douglas County or on the Douglas County Livestock Association for about 20 years as well. So I've had this interface with agricultural and natural resources all of my life and career. So this is kind of a natural for me.
And what do you grow on your land?
Well, we, like most farmers and ranchers, we've raised a variety of things. We had wine grapes for about 20 years. We've had some cattle. I was a 4-H leader for 15 years, so we raised project pigs for 4-H. We raised some hay. Like I say, we're doing a small logging project right now, so we have a little bit of timber. So you kind of meld all those things. I also had a wetland mitigation bank on a portion of the property. So like most ranchers, you can't just fit one thing. You adjust as markets change and as people's values change and your kids and everyone else has input.
My guests are Nellie McAdams, the founding executive director of the Oregon Agricultural Trust, and Steve Denny, a landowner in Douglas County. So, Steve, tell me about the economics of having that much land.
Well, it is quite a bit of land, but nothing nearly as large as some of the large ranches, you know, in southwest Oregon or in eastern Oregon. But, you know, the economics are, you know, we're trying to do what's best for the land, what's best for the family economically. And when I first met Nellie, as she probably doesn't even remember, but about 10 years ago, she put on a succession planning workshop in Bandon. I attended that and met her for the first time. But anyhow, we've had some discussions with the family on where we want to go, who wants to take over the farming activities, and, you know, and how we do that financially and legally. And so, you know, we're like every farmer or rancher trying to figure out what the next steps are and looking into the future.
Well, that's interesting because not every kid grows up and want to stay on the farm.
Well, and I've got three boys, and one of them is in Australia. I don't think he's really interested in the farm. I got another one who is in the nursing program, and he likes it, but is not interested. And I have a third son who has two daughters and a son, and they're real interested in taking this over. So, like I say, we'll see where it goes. You never know what life throws at you, but like I say, we need to plan for it and be prepared and have all our ducks in a row when the time comes.
Nellie, let's talk about some of those challenges that farmers are facing.
Where do I begin? There are a lot of challenges right now. It's very difficult to be profitable in agriculture and pretty much any of our commodities right now. For a number of reasons, cost and scarcity of labor are major challenges for sectors that need labor. There are a lot of regulations to comply with, and a lot of farmers and ranchers don't enter the field because they really love staying in the office. And then you come to succession as well. And we estimate that about 80% of Oregon farmers and ranchers probably don't have a thorough succession plan. Maybe it's because they haven't identified a successor. I mean, it's great to have a son involved, but maybe it's a niece, or maybe it's your farm manager, maybe it's somebody you haven't met yet. And so folks are starting to think creatively about it. But it's also just really emotionally challenging for folks to think about retiring from an identity that they have. You know, being a farmer is more than a profession. It's who you are. And it can be really difficult for folks to step down from that.
So are some of them thinking about selling off their land for development?
There are folks who are thinking about selling their land and trying to maximize the sales price. In some cases, that would be to allow for development to happen on that land. And I think a lot of folks that we work with, especially multi-generational farmers and ranchers, consider the farm and the land to be almost like a grandfather or a grandchild. It's like a part of your family. And the thought of seeing that being lost from agriculture and habitat just breaks a lot of people's hearts. And so we see a lot of generosity in elder generations who are passing land on to non-family successors and making that transition possible.
Well, give me a sense of the pros and cons of developing rural land.
Well, in terms of the pros, I suppose from the purchaser's perspective, it's great to have a beautiful view to wake up to in the morning. And you have less traffic and congestion. I mean, it's more of an amenity value. But if you think about the cons, these rural homes really are a strain on county finances. It costs about $1.40 for counties to provide the services like transportation, roads, any kind of fire, sewer, water to these properties for every dollar that they receive. So counties definitely don't get their dollars worth for low density development. And we see these homes more in the path of fire, and it increases the cost of risk to life and firefighting when we look at low density development. We also see low ground water tables being even lower because these homes are usually on well and draining water in some limited areas. And then we also see threats to the farmland around it. The more fragmentation you have, the more likely that farms and ranches around you are also going to succumb to low-density development, or it's going to be really difficult for them to continue to farm or pass it on.
So why do policymakers make that available if it's such a burden to the city?
Well, you know, Oregon for the past 50-plus years has had a land use program that has made it relatively difficult to have low-density development that's inefficient. I would say that there are sometimes pressures to expand low-density development, and that might come from individual landowners or associations who represent them who want to sell their land for a higher property value and at the cost of local government and the community surrounding them. So it's a balance, and unfortunately, sometimes squeaky wheels might get the grease.
So, Steve, what changes have you experienced in the soil, the water, the climate?
Well, definitely the climate is getting drier and longer, hotter summers and later earlier springs and later falls. On my property, I probably had about, 50% of the Doug fir trees on my property have died, both from insects and drought-related type stuff. So that definitely has been a change I've noticed over the last 35-plus years on the property. The other thing that to feed on what Nellie had mentioned was we live next to a really large tract of 5-acre homes, and so we've seen that all fill in over the years. So there's been a lot of changes going on, but our goal is to kind of preserve it and keep it the way it is you know, for my offspring or whoever takes over the farm when we're gone. So,
well, let's talk
lose
about
all that work.
Let's talk about that on the other side. We need to take a short break right now. So, Steve, you have 100 acres, and you've grown a number of different things on your land, and you want to preserve it. And right now, you have several kids, and I don't think they're all going to jump into becoming farmers. So, what's on the horizon?
Well, we've already started discussions with the family on what we're going to do for the future. As Nellie said, that's sometimes an uncomfortable, challenging conversation to have. Getting them all together is probably the biggest challenge because, like I said, one of my sons is in Australia, so he's a little in a different hemisphere in a much different time zone. So anyhow, that's there. We've also been exploring Nellie's program with a long-term conservation easement, just starting that process through the Oregon Ag Trust. We think that's a potentially viable option to preserve the land, give our family the options of, you know, what we want to protect long-term. And, you know, and as Nellie mentioned, if long-term, if we can make this property a little more affordable to either the kids or some other party that wants to purchase it by reducing the total value because of the conservation restrictions, you know, that's an option as well. But like I say, we've been talking about this for the last several years, knowing that, you know, a change is coming. I'm not a young chicken anymore. So like I say, we're just having those discussions and what really we want to do with the property.
And currently, what's being grown on the property? How's the property being used?
Well, a number of ways. I say we do raise some hay. We've gotten out of the grape business because, like Nellie said, we had difficulty finding enough help. We had just enough acres that my father-in-law and I couldn't do it by ourselves, but not enough to make it viable to hire consistent help. So, like I say, we fell into that trap. But we do graze some. I've been looking at a portion of the property to raise do a contract with a local grower to grow native plants and seeds on a portion of the property. I say we're doing a little logging right now, primarily to conserve oak woodlands and to do fire prevention, because catastrophic fire is probably one of my biggest fears with the change in climate and, you know, all the dead and down materials that we've had from this drought that we're long-term drought that we're in. So those are all challenges that we've been facing.
So Nellie, you hear Steve's story and you've heard others. How do you help?
Well, what we provide is really a way to think about your real estate in a different way. You know, real estate is a bundle of sticks, and some of those sticks might be development rights that you don't really need if the land is going to stay in farming or if you're going to be preserving habitat. But those sticks, like the development rights, often drive the price of that agricultural land far above a farmer's ability to buy it. So it can really inflate the price of land to have development potential on it. So what we do is help farmers and ranchers get paid or charitable tax deduction in exchange for handing over those development rights to our land trust. We make sure that no one develops it in that way into the future. And then for the next buyer, the land is going to be valued at agricultural value, making it more affordable to them. And land right now is almost out of the price range of most farmers and ranchers who are making their living just from the sale of agricultural goods.
So you're lowering the price of the land? The value of the land?
The land, after the easements on it, is going to have a lower value. It's going to have agricultural value. But the landowner's made whole because the lost value, they get compensated for that with cash and or a charitable tax deduction. So if the land starts at $1 million and then after the easement it's at $700,000, they'll receive that $300,000 in a charitable tax deduction that they can take against their income or in grant dollars. So the landowner still has $1 million in assets to use one way or another, but the next generation doesn't have to pay for the development rights when they buy the land.
And so the farmer keeps the land. It's still theirs.
The farmer owns the land. They can sell the land, give it away in their will. We don't own the land. And when we hold an easement on it, we just hold the development rights and make sure that no one else uses them.
My guests are Nellie McAdams. She's the founding executive director of the Oregon Agricultural Trust, and Steve Denny, a landowner in Douglas County. So, Nellie, tell me about some of the farmlands in your trust.
Right now, we've protected 5 properties, and that ranges from a biodynamic winery in Clackamas County to a 27,000-acre ranch in Harney and Malheur counties, and everything in between. We are working at size neutral and practice neutral, trying to just protect agricultural land throughout the state and make it available for agricultural production.
And sum total, how much acreage?
We've protected 30,800 acres so far. We're hoping to get to 50,000 by the end of this year. And we have about 70 projects in the hopper that'll get us to around 200,000 if we can protect them all right now.
So as I understand it, you're an attorney, right?
I am.
How did you come to this work?
Well, my family farms, and my dad's actually also an attorney farmer. It's hard to tell which is your side career and which is your primary career at some points. But my dad's field was in estates and trusts. And so he was working on not only my family's estate, but other farm families' estates. And from him, I just learned about some of the challenges that farm families are facing in passing the land on to the next generation. And it just got me thinking, you know, I wanted to use my career for conservation and to support rural communities. And that's how I started to focus on working lands conservation easements as a tool that really needed some expert attention, but was not being serviced adequately in the state.
Where'd you grow up? Did you grow up on a farm?
On the weekends, we would be on my family's farm in Gaston, Oregon, in Yamhill County. And on the weekdays, we would be in Southwest Portland. My parents both had city jobs, and then we would go out and take care of the farm. And basically, they had 2 full-time jobs.
So how much land did your family own?
We have about 400 acres. My dad, as part of our succession plan from his parents, he sold about 80 of that, and it was subdivided into 5-acre lots that are in a limited groundwater area, creating significant water issues for that region. That land will never be farmed again, and it's driving up the value of the land around it. Making it unavailable for agriculture. So that's like an example for my family.
So you saw this happen firsthand.
Exactly.
Will you become a farmer? You're going to leave being attorney and go back to the farm?
I will be the manager of my family's farm. My brother is not interested in taking over the farm, but is a wonderful help on the farm. But I will, when my dad and mom pass away, they will pass on their assets half and half, but I'll have first dibs on all of the farm assets. And then I'll have a built-in mortgage to my brother to buy off the rest of the farm from him. So my parents have been thinking a generation ahead in terms of how they're going to pass it on to me to make it possible for me to own that farm.
So you have a plan.
We have a plan. And actually, you know, my dad being an estate planning attorney, we talk about it all the time. We talk about my dad's death every time I see him, and we read through the will every Christmas. So, you know, this is what happens when you have an estate planner in the family, which, you know, it's really helpful. I know a lot about the farm operations that other farm families that might have been afraid to broach the topic probably haven't passed on.
It sounds like a lot of lovely family conversations at Thanksgiving.
Oh, don't be jealous.
So, Steve, tell me about your experience with the Oregon Land Trust. How'd you learn about it?
Well, like I say, I'm on the board of directors for the Bandon Dunes Charitable Foundation down in Bandon, Oregon, and also been on the board of directors for the Wild Rivers Land Trust. And so I've been around conservation easements most of my career, And I've known about this. I've followed the effort through the Oregon legislature that established it and all that. Like I say, I've met Nellie at some succession planning workshop. And so, like I say, I've just been aware of it through all my natural resource dealings. And then as a landowner, I think it's a good fit for, potentially good fit for our situation and our family. So I say that's why I'm exploring it with them now, and we'll see where it goes.
What's the timetable like from the time you start the conversation to the time you make a decision to the time it's done? What's that timetable like?
Well, it's been conversations for probably the last 5 to 10 years, just side conversations and what are we going to do with the farm in the future. I've started getting pretty serious about it in the last 2 years, trying to explore all the options, get all the background. And then at some point here, I hope by the end of the year to have a kind of a family get together and a real frank discussion, on what we want to do with the farm in the future. And once we make a decision, then you can start the legal processes, like Nellie described with her family of, you know, kind of a succession planning stage. But like I say, you always have hopes of doing this quickly. It's not a quick process. And so we'll just work through it as a family and see where it goes.
So, Nellie, how does the trust sustain itself?
We receive diverse funding sources, so state, federal, local funding. We receive foundation dollars, individual contributions really help, as well as corporate sponsorships. So our operating costs are funded through a number of different ways. But when we are purchasing easements from a landowner, when we're paying them for the development rights that they're giving up, we normally apply to, you know, a handful of different programs. One of them is the Oregon Agricultural Heritage Program, which is our state's matching grant program for working lands easements. And we are hopeful that $2 million is going to be included in the state agency Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board's budget in this legislative session, which is great, but you could add a zero or two to the end of that and still it wouldn't be enough to meet the demand. And we're looking at states like Tennessee that just this year contributed $25 million to their agricultural conservation easement program. And we'd love to see more of that in our state as well. And then there are several federal programs that we apply to. And we have one grant for $9.6 million in Lane County in particular that will allow us to protect agricultural land as well as restore oak habitat and provide cultural access to tribal members on that habitat.
So you also work with the tribes?
We absolutely endeavor to work with the tribes wherever we're at.
And so there are state funds involved, there are federal funds involved. What's the long-term vision?
The long-term vision is providing a resource for Oregon farmers and ranchers to not only protect their land, but to use this conservation tool for their economic development and the economic development of rural areas. You know, I think a lot of the grant programs focus on the habitat and land component of this, which we appreciate as well. But we also realize that farmers and ranchers are under economic strain, and we want to maximize their ability to use these easements to help out with the business, with succession, and with passing it on to future generations. And we even have a program that helps us do that called our Ag Business Support Program.
What's that called, and how does it work?
Our Ag Business Support Program does events around succession, business viability, mental health, and a number of different issues for farmers and ranchers and their service providers around the state. We educate about 1,000 people a year. And then we also have a one-on-one succession advising program where our advisor Tess basically acts as a quarterback to help families navigate the difficult interpersonal as well as economic issues around farm succession planning. So she's there as your support service and helping families keep on track in succession planning.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Thank you both.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you.